Chapter 10. Her grandson is dying, and such a gentleman through and through. Apostrophe apostrophe what? Dot 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 oh, it has something to do with that dreadful discovery. Apostrophe apostrophe discovery, my lady? Apostrophe apostrophe, she left the old woman with an evasive answer, and with a breaking heart crept along the road. Tears brimmed into her eyes as she walked, and by the time that she was out of sight sobs burst forth tumultuously. I am too fond of him. Apostrophe apostrophe she moaned. But I can't help it, and I don't care if it's wrong, I don't care. Apostrophe apostrophe, without further considerations, as to who beheld her doings she instinctively went straight towards Mrs. Martin's. Seeing a man coming she calmed herself sufficiently to ask him through her dropped veil how poor Mr. St. Cleeve was that day. But she only got the same reply. They say he is dying, my lady. Apostrophe apostrophe, when Swithin had parted from Lady Constantine, on the previous Ash Wednesday, he had gone straight to the homestead and prepared his account of a new astronomical discovery. Apostrophe apostrophe, it was written perhaps in too glowing a rhetoric for the true scientific tone of mind, but there was no doubt that his assertion met with a most startling aptness all the difficulties which had accompanied the received theories on the phenomena attending those changeable suns of marvelous systems so far away. It accounted for the nebulous mist that surrounds some of them at their weakest time, in short, took up a position of probability which has never yet been successfully assailed. The papers were written in triplicate, and carefully sealed up with blue wax. One copy was directed to Greenwich, another to the Royal Society, another to a prominent astronomer. A brief statement of the essence of the discovery was also prepared for the leading daily paper. He considered these documents, embodying as they did 2 years of his constant thought, reading, and observation, too important to be entrusted for posting to the hands of a messenger, too important to be sent to the sub-post office at hand. Though the day was wet, dripping wet, he went on foot with them to a chief office, 5 miles off, and registered them. Quite exhausted by the walk, after his long night work, wet through, yet sustained by the sense of a great achievement, he called at a bookseller's for the astronomical periodicals to which he subscribed. Then, resting for a short time at an inn, he plodded his way homewards, reading his papers as he went, and planning how to enjoy a repose on his laurels of a week or more. On he strolled through the rain, holding the umbrella vertically over the exposed page, to keep it dry while he read. Suddenly his eye was struck by an article. It was the review of a pamphlet by an American astronomer, in which the author announced a conclusive discovery with regard to variable stars. The discovery was precisely the discovery of Swithin St. Cleeve. Another man had forestalled his fame by a period of about 6 weeks. Then the youth found that the goddess Philosophy, to whom he had vowed to dedicate his whole life, would not in return support him through a single hour of despair. In truth, the impishness of circumstance was newer to him than it would have been to a philosopher of 80. In a wild wish for annihilation he flung himself down on a patch of heather that lay a little removed from the road, and in this humid bed remained motionless, while time passed by unheeded. At last, from sheer misery and weariness, he fell asleep. The March rain pelted him mercilessly, the beaded moisture from the heavily charged locks of heath penetrated him through back and sides, and clotted his hair to unsightly tags and tufts. When he awoke it was dark. He thought of his grandmother, and of her possible alarm at missing him. On attempting to rise, he found that he could hardly bend his joints, and that his clothes were as heavy as lead from saturation. His teeth chattering, and his knees trembling, he pursued his way home, where his appearance excited great concern. He was obliged at once to retire to bed, and the next day he was delirious from the chill. It was about 10 days after this unhappy occurrence that Lady Constantine learned the news, as above described, and hastened along to the homestead in that state of anguish in which the heart is no longer under the control of the judgment, and self-abandonment even to error, verges on heroism. On reaching the house in Welland Bottom, the door was opened to her by old Anna, who wore an assiduously sorrowful look, and Lady Constantine was shown into the large room, so white that the beams bent in the middle, where she took her seat in one of a methodic range of chairs, beneath a portrait of the Reverend Mr. St. Cleeve, her astronomer's erratic father. The 8 unwatered dying plants, in the row of 8 flower pots, denoted that there was something wrong in the house. Mrs. Martin came downstairs fretting, her wonder at beholding Lady Constantine not altogether displacing the previous mood of grief. "Here's a pretty kettle of fish, my lady!" " she exclaimed. Lady Constantine said, "Hush!" " and pointed inquiringly upward. "He is not overhead, my lady," replied Swithin's grandmother. "His bedroom is at the back of the house." "How is he now?" "He is better, just at this moment, and we are more hopeful. But he changes so." "May I go up? I know he would like to see me." Her presence having been made known to the sufferer, she was conducted upstairs to Swithin's room. The way thither was through the large chamber he had used as a study, and for the manufacture of optical instruments. There lay the large pasteboard telescope, that had been just such a failure as Crusoe's large boat. There were his diagrams, maps, globes, and celestial apparatus of various sorts. The absence of the worker, through illness or death, is sufficient to touch the prosiest workshop and tools with the hues of pathos, and it was with a swelling bosom that Lady Constantine passed through this arena of his youthful activities to the little chamber where he lay. Old Mrs. Martin sat down by the window, and Lady Constantine bent over Swithin. "Don't speak to me," she whispered. "It will weaken you. It will excite you. If you do speak, it must be very softly." She took his hand, and one irrepressible tear fell upon it. "Nothing will excite me now, Lady Constantine," he said. "Not even your goodness in coming. My last excitement was when I lost the battle. Do you know that my discovery has been forestalled? It is that's killing me. But you are going to recover. You are better, they say. Is it so?" I think I am, today. But who can be sure?" The poor boy was so upset at finding that his labor had been thrown away, said his grandmother, that he lay down in the rain and chilled his life out. How could you do it?" Lady Constantine whispered. "Oh, how could you think so much of renown, and so little of me? Why, for every discovery made there are 10 behind that await making. To commit suicide like this, as if there were nobody in the world to care for you. It was done in my haste, and I am very, very sorry for it. I beg both you and all my few friends never to forgive me. It would kill me with self-reproach, if you were to pardon my rashness." At this moment the doctor was announced, and Mrs. Martin went downstairs to receive him. Lady Constantine thought she would remain to hear his report, and for this purpose withdrew, and sat down in a nook of the adjoining workroom of Swithin, the doctor meeting her as he passed through it into the sick chamber. He was there a torturingly long time, but at length he came out to the room she waited in, and crossed it on his way downstairs. She rose and followed him to the stairhead. "How is he?" she anxiously asked. "Will he get over it?" The doctor, not knowing the depth of her interest in the patient, spoke with the blunt candor natural towards a comparatively indifferent inquirer. "No, Lady Constantine," he replied. There's a change for the worse. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he retired down the stairs. Scarcely knowing what she did, Lady Constantine ran back to Swithin's side, flung herself upon the bed, and in a paroxysm of sorrow kissed him. X. The placid inhabitants of the parish of Welland, including warbling wagoners, lone shepherds, plowmen, the blacksmith, the carpenter, the gardener at the great house, the steward and agent, the parson, clerk, and so on, were hourly expecting the announcement of St. Cleve's death. The sexton had been going to see his brother-in-law, 9 miles distant, but promptly postponed the visit for a few days, that there might be the regular professional hand present to toll the bell in a note of due fullness and solemnity. An attempt by a deputy, on a previous occasion of his absence, having degenerated into a miserable stammering clang that was a disgrace to the parish. But Swithin St. Cleve did not decease, a fact of which, indeed, the habituated reader will have been well aware ever since the rain came down upon the young man in the 9th chapter, and led to his alarming illness. Though, for that matter, so many maimed histories are hourly enacting themselves in this dun-colored world, as to lend almost a priority of interest to narratives concerning those who lay great bases for eternity which prove more short than waste or ruining. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how it arose, that he did not die, was in this wise, and his example affords another instance of that reflex rule of the vassal soul over the sovereign body, which, operating so wonderfully in elastic natures, and more or less in all, originally gave rise to the legend that supremacy lay on the other side. The evening of the day after the tender, despairing, farewell kiss of Lady Constantine, when he was a little less weak than during her visit, he lay with his face to the window. He lay alone, quiet and resigned. He had been thinking, sometimes of her and other friends, but chiefly of his lost discovery. Although nearly unconscious at the time, he had yet been aware of that kiss, as the delicate flush which followed it upon his cheek would have told. But he had attached little importance to it, as between woman and man. Had he been dying of love instead of wet weather, perhaps the impulsive act of that handsome lady would have been seized on as a proof that his love was returned. As it was, her kiss seemed but the evidence of a naturally demonstrative kindliness felt towards him, chiefly because he was believed to be leaving her forever. The reds of sunset passed, and dusk drew on. Old Anna came upstairs to pull down the blinds, and as she advanced to the window he said to her, in a faint voice, "Well, Hannah, what news today?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, nothing, sir, apostrophe, Hannah replied, looking out of the window with sad apathy, "only that there's a comet, they say." Apostrophe, apostrophe, a what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the dying astronomer, starting up on his elbow. "A comet, that's all, Master Swithin," apostrophe repeated Hannah, in a lower voice, fearing as he had done harm in some way. "Well, tell me," apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Swithin. "Is it Gambert's? Is it Charles V's, or Halley's, or Fay's, or whose?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, hush. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said she, thinking St. Cleve slightly delirious again. "'Tis God Almighty's, of course. I haven't seen him myself, but they say he's getting bigger every night, and that he'll be the biggest one known for 50 years when he's full-grown. There, you must not talk any more now, or I'll go away." Apostrophe, apostrophe, here was an amazing event, little noise as it had made in the happening. Of all phenomena that he had longed to witness during his short astronomical career, those appertaining to comets had excited him most. That the magnificent comet of 1811 would not return again for 30 centuries had been quite a permanent regret with him. And now, when the bottomless abyss of death seemed yawning beneath his feet, one of these much-desired apparitions, as large, apparently, as any of its tribe, had chosen to show itself. Oh, if I could but live to see that comet through my equatorial! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he cried. compared with comets, variable stars, which he had hitherto made a study, were, from their remoteness, uninteresting. They were to the former as the celebrities of Ujjayi and Yamsi to the celebrities of his own country. Members of the solar system, these dazzling and perplexing rangers, the fascination of all astronomers, rendered themselves still more fascinating by the sinister suspicion attaching to them of being possibly the ultimate destroyers of the human race. In his physical prostration, St. Cleve wept bitterly at not being hale and strong enough to welcome with proper honor the present specimen of these desirable visitors. The strenuous wish to live and behold the new phenomenon, supplanting the utter weariness of existence that he had heretofore experienced, gave him a new vitality. The crisis passed, there was a turn for the better, and after that he rapidly mended. The comet had in all probability saved his life. The limitless and complex wonders of the sky resumed their old power over his imagination. The possibilities of that unfathomable blue ocean were endless. Finer feats than ever he would perform were to be achieved in its investigation. What Lady Constantine had said, that for one discovery made 10 awaited making, was strikingly verified by the sudden appearance of this splendid marvel. The windows of St. Cleve's bedroom faced the west, and nothing would satisfy him but that his bed should be so pulled round as to give him a view of the low sky, in which the as yet minute tadpole of fire was recognizable. The mere sight of it seemed to lend him sufficient resolution to complete his own cure forthwith. His only fear now was lest, from some unexpected cause or other, the comet would vanish before he could get to the observatory on Rings Hill Spear. In his fervor to begin observing, he directed that an old telescope, which he had used in his first celestial attempts, should be tied at one end to the bedpost, and at the other fixed near his eye as he reclined. Equipped only with this rough improvisation, he began to take notes. Lady Constantine was forgotten, till one day, suddenly, wondering if she knew of the important phenomenon, he revolved in his mind whether as a fellow student and sincere friend of his she ought not to be sent for and instructed in the use of the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.